Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show. It's good to have you here with us. My name is Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for listening to the program. You can catch me on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com/RyanBallingy, Twitter and facebook.com/GolfNewsNet to hit us up. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, hear us on the TuneIn Radio app through GNN Radio, and on the GNN Radio stream on GolfNewsNet.com. 24/7, 365 golf talk when you want it. Again, great to have you here on the show. Last week we talked a bit about the notion of par 3 golf courses and what they might be able to do to help the game of golf succeed and grow. And another topic came up this week, thinking about the USGA's Pace of Play Symposium up at their Far Hills, New Jersey headquarters. I know that sounds incredibly exciting. Pace of play, that's just what you want to talk about. But when you sit behind a group for 3 or 4 straight holes on a Saturday afternoon and you just want to rip your hair out, or in my case, what's left of it, out of your skull, then you care about pace of play. In concept, pace of play is not very sexy. It sounds really freaking boring trying to figure out the components that make up a mathematical equation that explains why rounds take 4.5 hours, 5.5 hours, 6 hours, or you just walk off the damn course. And in that context, I don't really care about the mathematical formula. I care about making pace of play better, making it a non-issue, making it faster. And I say those things because I like to play golf quickly. I know there are plenty of people who have responded to me on Twitter over the years, or Facebook over the years, or an email over the years, that have said, Ryan, I just don't care about pace of play. I'm out there to enjoy myself, and however long it takes is however long it takes. But in concept, that sounds true. But more often than not, people get upset when they have to wait to hit their golf shot. And so for that reason, I think pace of play is important. It means people enjoy the game more. For people who are beginners, it means they rip the Band-Aid off faster if they're not doing well. And that's important, to be able to keep people in the game, to make them not feel like they are serving a prison sentence every time they go on the golf course and they just can't escape until the warden gives them the A-OK to finish the 18th hole. I think that doesn't work very well either for the sport. So thinking about the pace of play symposium, the basic gist of this is to get people from all walks of golf and the media in one spot and to kind of discuss the best way to improve the pace of play in the game. And we have all these ideas about why golf takes too long to play and what we can do about it. And the common response that comes up is that it is the professional influence that has slowed the game down. It's trickled down to the amateur level, and that so many amateurs truly believe that they need to go at the pace of a professional for success, that it hampers their ability to play at a reasonable pace, and they just take forever. And to some extent, I think that's true. But for a lot of cases, I really don't believe that to be it. I believe more than anything else, it is a recognition or a lack of awareness about how quickly the game should be played and how slow people can be. More often than not, slow golfers don't know they're slow golfers. They really don't. And until you tell them, here's why you're slow, they just kind of go on naively believing that they're going at just the fine pace until they realize they take 3 or 4 practice strokes too many, the result isn't worth it, that they walk slow, that they don't play ready golf, all these finer points that you and I, if you're listening to this podcast and haven't turned it off already, know are the reasons why people are slow. But in a broader sense, this is kind of where my topic went. I wrote something about it for GolfNewsNet.com, so please check it out. This is kind of a verbalization of that thought. But it came to me immediately on Twitter, thinking about the concept of green fees. When you pay a green fee to play golf, the green fee that you pay is not for a definitive amount of time. It's for a definitive number of holes. You either pay an 18-hole green fee, or a 9-hole green fee. If you're playing a replay rate, you're playing for another 18 holes or 9 holes. If you are playing a twilight rate, you're playing as many holes as you can get in. You're essentially playing for a buffet rate, you know, an all-you-can-eat buffet of golf at this cost. But all of those things have no set time limit. You're not renting space on the golf course property for X amount of time. You're there until it's done or until you've had enough. And in that sense, I think the fundamental way that we pay for golf, that golf is paid for as a service, it just kind of allows for slow play. Because when you pay for something, you are paying, more often than not, by time. You pay for bowling lanes by the hour. You don't pay by the game anymore. They get rid of by the game. You pay for, if you're a poker player like I am, and you go to a casino, nowadays you pay for the time to rent the table space, to rent the seat your butt sits in while you play golf. They don't take so much of a rake anymore because the amount of hands that they deal can vary from dealer to dealer, player to player. It all can vary very wildly. So they just decided to standardize it. It's $7 an hour, pay up every hour. And that's the way they make their money. And then you kind of look at golf and you come back to it and you go, wait, these participation sports or games are an awful lot like golf. Why in the world are we not paying by the hour? That's what green fees should be. They should be an hourly rental of your time on the course. And when you're done, you don't pay up front, you pay at the end. And at the end, they say, well, Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, you guys took 5.5 hours to play a round of golf today. At our hourly rate of $7 an hour, that is $38.50 each, please. And then you fork it over and that's the end. I think that makes more sense than anything. Because that is the incentive to speed up play. That is the incentive that you need to be able to go a little bit quicker because you're paying for it. You're investing time into it. And when you invest time into something and you have to pay by the hour, you tend to want to get it done pretty quickly. And we're not going to make any snide remarks about where that could go. But what I'm trying to communicate here is that people don't take ownership of time in golf. Golf isn't thought of in time. It's a sport without a time limit. It's like baseball in that regard. In baseball, it's kind of good that there's no time limit because you may get a game that's 2 hours. You may get a game that's 3 hours. If you're watching a Red Sox-Yankees game, it's going to be 5 hours. But that's an indefinite amount of time you're being entertained. And there's nobody else holding things up. It's not like there's another baseball game after the one that you're watching unless it's a day-night doubleheader. More often than not, you're there for the one game. You can stay as long as you want. If it takes too long, you can walk away. You've had your entertainment fill. Most people think about a baseball game these days 2.5-3 hours. So if you got 3 hours worth of entertainment, then you got your money's worth. You can leave if you're bored. But in golf, that's not the case. There's always someone behind you and always someone in front of you, which means if you're slow, you're ruining somebody else's time. And that means their entertainment value isn't as well spent, isn't as well regarded as yours, because you're getting the pace that you want, but the other people around you aren't. And that kind of ruins the experience. And it only takes one or two bad groups at the start of a day or any point in the day on a golf course. And all of a sudden, the experience is ruined for a lot of people, not just you. And there are not a lot of ways in which that can be remedied. And I say that because I've tried. I mean, there are just not a lot of people who are willing to just drive around a group and skip a hole. So the people that you're playing with won't really do that. They won't take that extreme measure because that means they're costing themselves a hole that they paid for. So the per hole expense goes up, right? And they're not willing to usually play through a group because that means they've got to ask the group in front of them if they can play through. The people that are usually in front don't wind up asking because waving people through because that's a lost art form. And if you're slow, you don't know that you're slow usually unless you're playing with somebody fast and slow who the fast person realizes and tells the slow person, hey, we should let these faster people go through or lesser people go through or whatever the number is or whatever the expression's got to be. And so that means people just kind of put up with it, and they complain about it to each other, and then when they're done, they're angry that it took so long, and they don't come back to the golf course because it has a reputation of being slow. Not so great. It's not good for the sport. But if you charge by the hour, and you set kind of a price maximum, so you say, so-and-so golf course based on how nice of a course it is, how open the tee sheet is, the slash expected pace, this is what you can expect to pay per hour. Obviously, you kind of have to learn how to adapt that based off of the green fee model today, but let's say it takes 4 hours to play Pebble Beach usually. It's obviously an experience you want to savor, but it typically costs about $400 for the green fee. Obviously, there are other fees. You got to stay there. You got to have a caddy, all that crap, but $400 for the green fee. So let's say you pay $100 an hour to rent the course. Do you think people will take longer? Do you think that they'll take that fifth hour and bring it into play to really savor the flavor of playing Pebble Beach? Or do you think they play in 3.5 hours to save $50? Probably if you're that kind of baller status and you're playing Pebble Beach with a regular green fee, either this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing and you're going to enjoy it, or you really don't care. You're just going to go whatever pace you want. But if you play your local municipal course and you play value golf and you're playing for a $30 green fee and you're playing at $5 an hour, then maybe it does behoove you to save a couple bucks. It's a sleeve of golf balls. That's a part towards a hat. That's something else you can do. It's a Coke or a beer after the round if you don't have to pay it. So I think that there's a reasonable understanding that the of what golf costs per hour if you did it that way. And I think people would make that analysis for themselves. Am I willing to save money to play faster golf and for the experience to be shorter? Or am I willing to just kind of go at whatever pace I feel like and everybody else be damned? I think it would be an interesting experiment. I don't know how it would play out. You'd obviously have to see it happen in action. But you would have to set a price maximum. You'd have to say, you can only be on the course for no longer than 6 hours. And if you hit the 6-hour mark, not only is that the maximum you can pay, that's the max amount of time you're on the course, you're gone. Your cart doesn't work anymore at 6 hours. We're coming to get you at 6 hours. And whatever you finished is what you finished. I think that would actually help the worst of the worst offenders, because that's where I find the people are just dreadful. That they've gotten so late into the round, they're just so slow, and they're going to finish no matter what. And if you just came up to a slow group that was approaching the 6-hour mark on the 16th hole and you went, you're done here. They go, oh, no, we just have a few holes left. We play really fast. They play the last 2.5 holes in 10 minutes because they would just rock it through. I think that's a legitimate gripe. I think a legitimate way to try to deal with it. Now, technology is going to help. The USGA has come up with a great idea. They've come up with this kind of sensor that goes over the flagstick that has a sensor that when you push it, you move it in and out of the ground, sticking it back into the pin location, then you know that group has come and gone, and it sends a signal through GPS and kind of records the time, and that's the way they measure pace of play. And that's all well and good. But I really do think that attaching a financial value to golf, to the time spent playing golf, would really help pace of, not only pace of play, but I think it would also help how often people come out and play. Because you think of a green fee as kind of a vague amount. I'm paying $50 to play golf. Well, what do you get for that? If I said I'm playing golf at $6 an hour, that's a little bit different, because then it's a financial proposition. What else am I doing that I can get that $6 back, or that it doesn't mean that much to me? Then I think people understand the cost of the game a little bit better. There's a value in the game of golf again, and there's something that you can compare it to. And I just don't think that's very well understood. And I think that also kind of has a reason of turning people away from the game, because if you don't know what you're getting, you don't know what you're buying, then why buy it? I mean, why would you think about the contest that you probably used to have in elementary school where they filled a glass jar with jelly beans and said, if you guess how many jelly beans are in it, you get the jelly beans. Well, what if there aren't that many jelly beans in there? Then why am I guessing? Is it really worth it to me? I don't know what I'm getting. And I kind of feel like that's what you're doing when you play golf. You're kind of guessing. You don't, until you're out there, unless you play all the time, you don't really know the quality of the course. You don't know the pace of play. You don't know if you're really going to enjoy it all that much. But We'll see. And then you go out and you wing it and you hope it works out. I don't like that. I don't think golf should be that way. I think that it should be more definitive, it should be more obvious, and that helps beginners. Ultimately, we want to improve pace of play, and I hope that that does actually happen. But it seems like there's some pushback from one of the bigger causes of how player behaviors influence it, and that's at the professional level. And this kind of segues into an interesting quote from PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham that came in an interview with GolfChannel.com's Rex Hoggard. They were kind of talking about this notion of how to improve pace of play, and Fincham suggests that maybe the Ryder Cup loss will actually spur on people to play faster, and here's the logic. The Americans were smoked 7-1 in the foursome sessions, which means, you know, the alternate shot sessions. And they were smoked because they don't play very often. So they need to play more often. They need to have more familiarity with foursomes. So maybe professionals will play more foursomes, including maybe some exhibition events on the PGA Tour, meaning that I'll have a trickle-down effect so that more amateurs will want to play foursomes because they'll see it's just as fun as regular golf, more efficient, and team-based. And if they play foursomes more often, that means they hit less shots because there's only two people. There's two people playing one golf ball, essentially. So that means you don't have to worry about four people playing. You play about two people playing, and it'll go faster, and everybody will be happier. Which led him to say this, quote, if you go to Augusta National or Pine Valley or Cypress Point and you're playing with some single-digit handicaps, how long does it take you to play? 4 hours. If it's 4:15 or 4:20, you're going to worry about shaving 10 minutes off a round? It's not a driving factor. Everybody talks about playing faster. That doesn't make a lot of sense. End quote. That's bullshit. I cannot believe Tim Fincham, who is typically a very bright guy, sounded that out of touch about pace of play in golf. There are so many things wrong with what he said as it relates to broader golf, it's not even freaking funny. First part, Augusta, Pine Valley, Cypress Point. If you can raise your hand on the other side of this, and you're listening to this, that you've played any of those three courses, especially if you played more than one of those three courses, then this discussion has nothing to do with you. Private club golf at the highest level for good players, that's well-paced golf. Nobody's worried about that. The games that I play at my golf club, right through the fence of where I'm looking at right now, when I play with the better group of players that I play with from time to time, we play at 7 in the morning or 8 in the morning, and we're done in 3.5 hours, and we walk the course. Why? Because those people know how to play golf well, and they know how to play it in a courteous way that speeds up play. There is no slowdown. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about guys that play Augusta, Pine Valley, or Cypress Point. We're not talking about people that are single-digit handicaps. We're not talking about the dream round scenario where you're only ever going to play this place once or twice so you can take your sweet damn time getting in and around the golf course. This is not what we're talking about when we're talking pace of play. When we're talking pace of play, we're talking 15,000 facilities around this country, and so many of them are public, so many of them are high-volume municipal or semi-public golf courses that see a ton of play because the value of golf has been driven down by the likes of Golf Now and just this general race to the bottom of the industry to make green fees as low as possible that they're practically paying you after their overhead costs are factored in to play their golf course. They want to jam it to the gills because you won't pay $27 for golf, but you'll pay $24, and that $3 difference means everything to them when you multiply it out over the tee sheet over the course of a day. That's probably not even utilized as it should be because no one's willing to make the effort to do it. That's what we're talking about because the industry doesn't make the effort, and they've come to the point where they see golf as more a vehicle to get people in to do other stuff. They don't see the fundamental value of the green fee anymore, and they've dropped it to the point because of gaming the system that they just have to stuff the course to the gills. That's what we're talking about. That's the issue at play. That's why pace is slow. And it goes back, again, to the value of green fees. And in this case, what we're talking about, where golf has been driven down in price so much that it's really just starting to creep up. It really is just starting to creep up. And I know people complain about it all the time and go, well, why is the Golf Now fee another $1.50? Because people are recovering. The economy's getting better, and they want a piece of the pie, dude. and they're going to come and get it from you. So this whole notion of rock bottom golf is kind of, you know, going away. And it should go away. Golf should not be cheap. It shouldn't be expensive, but it shouldn't be cheap because it's bad for everybody involved. And we just outlined that a little bit here. On the player side, it's bad because the course has to be stuffed to the gills to make the same amount of money because you need more rounds because you make less money. That's simple multiplication there. But that means there are more people in the course, which means they need to have more tee times, which means less spacing, which means there are everybody is on top of one another, and they're just going to herd you through like cattle, just like Southwest Airlines, and hope that you don't get pissed off and you come back because you're willing to deal with it because you got a great price. But what if green fees were a little bit more? Would you be willing to pay a little bit more in an hourly fee if you knew that the course that you were playing at didn't send people off every 7 minutes, which is absolutely insane, but sent them off every 10 minutes or even 11 or 12 minutes, which would mean even fewer times on the schedule because that's a 5 minute difference per hour. And if you look at that over the course of an hour, there are 12 5 minute increments. So that means you're going to knock down the number of rounds that you can have in a course of a day, number of times you have in the course of a day. But it also means the pace of play is going to improve. You're going to have a better experience. The course isn't going to get so beat up because there are going to be so many people on it, which means the agronomy costs go down, which means that they don't have to raise the green fee $7.50. They only have to raise it $5 to get a better experience and a better pace of play out of it. And that's all because you were willing to pay by the hour and pay a little bit more to have a rapid but enjoyable experience instead of a slow but cheap experience. That's the transition this game has to make right now. It has to see the value in golf again. And we're not talking to the Donald Trump extreme of golf needs to be aspirational and really effing expensive. We're talking about golf needing to be valued. Your time also deserves to be valued as much as your wallet. And that is why I think a hourly green fee, an hourly rental, of course, is the way to go. I think that's the path of the future. I think it's a way of putting golf in nominal, understandable terms. And I think that it can lead to a course rating system that you can understand the tiers you're paying into for the hourly fee that you're paying. Instead of worrying about whether you're gaming golf now or not, whether your tee sheet is utilized or not, you can use factors to understand and dynamically price what golf's going to cost. If a golf course is in great shape, has not a lot of people on it, and is playing pretty quickly, then maybe you pay a standard green fee, or maybe even a little bit more of an expensive one. And if there are a lot of people on the golf course, and it's really freaking slow, then you pay a little bit less to take that chance and go out there and maybe have a terrible time because you may get frustrated like I do when you have to wait or there's an open hole in front of the group that's in front of you or whatever. That is where we have to go in terms of a pricing model and a respective pace of play model. Don't get me wrong. Courses do have to do their part. Rangers can't just drive around in the golf cart all day and just wave at people. They have to be vigilant. They have to actually matter to the pace of play on the golf course. And they should be empowered to kick you the hell off or move you the hell along if you're slow. Most places don't do that. And that's really where it gets in the way. And you know why they don't do it? Goes back to the value discussion. Because you already paid $15 less than what the rack rate was because you went on Golf Now, because you thought you were getting a great deal. So now you're slow, the group behind you slow, they're mad, but because you both paid so little and we're so desperate to keep you as customers, we're not going to say anything to any of you unless one of you complained to us, and then we'll give you $10 off at the golf shop or a free beer or some crap like that and hope that it all kind of smooths it over. Again, this is a fundamentally broken model of operation where we disrespect everything about golf. Your time, your money, your enjoyment, all of it. Optional. As long as you come in and pay that green fee that's deeply discounted. That's where we're going here. I know we've talked about these problems that are in the sport of golf, but so much of it really does have to do with the value of golf. It's true. And the value of golf to your wallet. We've talked about on both ends. What will make people play golf? The the feeling that they've got money to spend on golf. What will make people enjoy golf more? If it goes faster. So there's value in it going faster, and people will play if they feel like they've got enough value in their pocket to have a reasonably paced experience. It's an easy match. If you can make that, golf's doing great. If not, then if one of those is broken, then golf's not going to do so well. And both are kind of broken. One's getting better, how people feel about the economy, how people feel about the value on their wallet. One is not. Pace of play is not getting better. You improve the other, then you've got a piece for the golf industry to really rally around and feel like they're doing something great, for players to feel like they're respected and they're appreciated, and that, yeah, they're paying a little bit more, but they're going to have a great time, a better time than they would otherwise on a stuffed to the gills golf course. It's another 25-minute diatribe on what's killing golf today. But it's not killing the sport, because we love the sport. We're resilient. We hate each other. We hate ourselves so much that we play golf. And it makes it kind of really interesting, because you really have to hate yourself. You really have to be a masochist to play golf to love it, because you're never going to get it right. And then to be involved in the industry, it's kind of imperfect, but willing to believe that everything's so great. And that is really the great fundamental truth about golf, is that, and not only for players, for operation, that it's an imperfect human playing a great sport, an imperfect human playing a sport they'll never get right, but they do it anyway, and they keep trying, and oftentimes they keep trying it the exact same way. That's how golf courses are operated in this country, in many pockets. Imperfect people who just keep running things the way they've been running them, because it hasn't run them into the ground yet. And when they get run into the ground, then they call somebody for help, or it's too late and it's a tumbleweed farm. We need to stop thinking that way, especially on the business side. We need to look at ourselves hard and make changes. Not talk changes, make changes. And when we make changes, measure them. And if they work, keep doing them. And if they fail, try again. And that was, in one sense, the great idea behind Hack Golf, was let's come up with all kinds of ideas and try them. And if they work, stick with them. If they don't, kick them to the curb. That's what we have to do. As an industry, that's what we have to do. We have to keep trying ideas and sharing that knowledge. And people aren't going to be willing to do that because they're competition. There's this notion in and around the golf shops. Go to a golf shop and talk to somebody about their competitor for 10 minutes. They'll ask you if you know their rack rates. They want as much intel as humanly possible at the competition down the street. And yes, it is a competition. We're all battling for the same pool of golfers if you're running a golf course. But we are also one industry that is in a dogfight with societal change, demographic movement, and how people live their lives. So what's more important? Beating the guy down the street, or working together to keep people involved in this game and finding new ways to get new people involved so that we all have this game to enjoy for at least the rest of our lives, much less the next generation? I think it's the latter. I think we have to care about golf at large and stop caring about our individual small pocket of the universe, which really, we just landed on a comet. So the universe is way bigger. And if that moment doesn't strike you as how small we are in the world, that we landed a rocket 300 million miles away on a comet, I can't help you. But I'll still be here talking about golf's problems and hoping somebody listens. That's it for this week's 19th Hole Golf Show. Next week on the show, I'm sure I'll find something that pisses me off and we'll talk about it for 30 minutes. We'll try to find something related to the PGA Tour end of its season as the wraparound schedule comes to a close. The Race to Dubai will come to an end. And soon enough, so will the LPGA Tour with its Race to the CME Globe, the inaugural run closing up in Florida. Until next week, and we're happy to be back on a weekly basis, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.